Hello listeners, welcome to Film Club episode 15. Apologies that this is a little bit later than usual. It's Christmas time, it's the holiday seasons, schedules are conflicting, times are getting busy, lists are being drawn up, films are being reviewed. It's a busy time of the year, especially when it comes to all things pop culture and in particular film. But we have not abandoned you, do not worry, we are here and we are here to talk about the wonderful, weird, macabre odyssey that is Andrzej Sadowski, I think that's how I pronounce his name, his 1981 film Possession, which if you listened to the last episode you will know was my pick. Surprisingly, picked a weird film. Who saw that one coming? I am of course Mel Foster, joined as always by my partner in crime, Mr. Dan Seraph. How are you doing, sir?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm chomping at the bit to see what you made of this film, because it is a very polarizing film, hence why I picked it. And I really wanted to get into see what you think of it. But of course, as we say at the start of each episode, if you haven't seen the film yet, you might want to stop here. In fact, you're going to want to, because it will probably be very spoilerific. So if you haven't got around to checking out the film yet, do yourself a favor, pause the podcast, come back to it after you have seen the film, and see if your thoughts, ideas, concepts, theories, beliefs line up with what we're about to dishevel in the next so many minutes, or however long it takes us to kind of go through this weird abyss of strangeness. So go do that if you haven't seen the film already, and then come back. But if you have, strap your seatbelts on tight as we enter a wonderful world of bizarre cinema. What did you think of Possession? Does that sum it up?
No. Generally, I really liked the film. I did. I thought there were so many things about the film that I was really, really just kind of wowed by. Particularly, I mean, one of the things that struck me first of all was the style of the film, which is so similar to The Shining. And, you know, it also kind of has lots of hints towards kind of Roman Polanski films, especially Repulsion as well, which is another film like The Shining that I absolutely love. And so there were lots and lots of things about Possession that I really liked, but ultimately I can't figure out the movie. I've only seen it once, and I can't get my head around so many things. I can tell that it's all pointing towards some kind of theme or some kind of idea, but getting there and kind of singling out what it's trying to say and what it's trying to do, it's really kind of challenged me. And yeah, I mean, I really did like the film. It's just, I found it such a challenge.
Mm-hmm. And I said that when I first picked it. It is a very challenging film in the sense that there really is no plot or any kind of narrative, to be honest. It's a film that is basically chock full of symbolism and metaphors and meanings behind things. And it's full of that. So for a lot of people that like their films to be sort of plot or story driven, it's definitely not going to be a film they're going to want to come back to, or even maybe perhaps watch in the first place. But I think the sort of lack of conventional structure and the lack of any real sort of sturdy narrative actually helps the film. I completely see what you mean, because having seen it again now, there's a lot more which I got from it, but there's still so much that evades me, that eludes me, that I just can't put my finger on. And even now, as a general rule, I think I really like the film. I say I think, but there's things in it which are just like, it is a hard film to narrow down, and it's a hard film to kind of really encapsulate any particular one feeling. It's not something that you can give a thumbs up or thumbs down to. It's like, I don't really know.
Yeah, but that's kind of one of the things that I liked about it. I mean, okay, first of all, one of the things that I really did pick up from the film is the fact that it's also worth noting, actually, that Andrzej Sadowski, I hope I'm saying that right,
he wrote the film
during a breakup with his then-girlfriend or wife, and so a lot of that kind of comes through in the screenplay. You know, this is, above anything else, a story of kind of a doomed relationship and, you know, kind of an insight into these two characters as their marriage tumbles apart. And that's sort of kind of what anchors the film, really, those two characters. And, you know, while the film could be just this complete mess of bizarre symbolism and, you know, weird happenings, I think it's anchored, and one of the things that makes the film so good is the fact that it's anchored by these very kind of real emotions that the two main characters, Anna and Mark, go through.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point that you pull out, because I do believe he was in the midst of a divorce when he wrote and started principal scripting for the film. And you kind of get that. The one thing that I think pulls out as a certain constant, and it applies in various shapes and degrees of feeling and the sort of emotional spectrum, is that the film seems to be, as a whole, like a very warped dissection of faith in general. Whether that be faith in an institutionalized relationship, a marriage, a partnership, or even like sexuality in its own, and even religion. There's so many religious connotations in this film. It's crazy, but I think it all kind of, it's almost as if, like, during the time that he's gone through this hardship, this sort of breakdown of his marriage, that he's literally just kind of questioned his faith in everything, and that it just kind of unravels and unspirals within the film, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the things that I also noticed from the film is the fact that, you know, I think both of these characters are kind of tied by the idea that they are kind of fantasizing about, you know, what they kind of really want from their partners. Of course, you have the teacher that looks pretty much identical to Anna. And, you know, in the first scene that she appears, I think Mark makes some kind of statement, like, he doesn't like pull at her hair and ask about a wig or something.
Yeah, he says, "What are you doing? Do you find this funny? Is this a joke to you? Where did you get this wig?"
Yeah, exactly. And so you have that, and then you have Anna, who's obviously kind of seeing some clear kind of fantasy in the monster thing that she ends up kind of having sexual relationship with. So yeah, I mean, there is this obviously kind of idea about, you know, the relationship between the two partners and how it's tested, and, you know, what kind of spirals out of the insecurity and, you know, the kind of mistrust and faithlessness, as you said, and like in between these two partners. And I thought it was really interesting in the film.
It almost takes on like a meta sense in that way, because it's almost as if like the film for Zelowski has become this sense of escapism, and inside that escapism he has these two characters bound by this sense of struggled faith, finding their own escapism, as you say, through the teacher, who is also played by Isabella Gianni, who obviously looks exactly the same as her, and of course Anna's relationship with the monster, the giant squid-like thing, which in itself is a metaphor for many, many things. But it's wonderful. It's almost like a Russian doll effect. Like, the film for him is escapism, but it's also escapism within the film, and it kind of goes full circle, because it seems to be a film in which you obviously have to suspend disbelief and reality if you go with the film. Obviously, there'll be a lot of people that don't, and I can see why a lot of people will dislike the film, because it is challenging. But if you kind of ride along with where the film's going, it's almost a sense of, like, cathartic escapism for the viewer as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know it's more than anything else that this is a film obviously very personal to Andrzej Zulawski. Like, this is obviously something he's put a lot of himself into, and he was obviously very tortured in writing it. I think you really do get a sense of someone being super tortured when they wrote this. It's funny about the idea of escapism, because, okay, I'm going to do a lot of this during this week's show, because, like I said, I'm really struggling to try and get my head around it. I only watched the film today, and I'm still trying to digest it. So I'm going to throw out a lot of potential theories at you, make no sense, but I'm going to try and get my head around them.
It sounds perfectly befitting with the film. Go for it.
Okay, obviously the Berlin setting is like a really important part of Possession. And there's obviously some kind of political context within the film, you know, about, you know, it opens up with this kind of like real kind of post-Holocaust kind of imagery, you know, and outside the window, I think you still kind of see like the turrets of, you know, from the Berlin Wall. And I'm trying to figure out what that kind of means. I don't know if that has anything to do with a kind of idea of escapism, you know, like, this is obviously a time and a place that many people didn't want to be in. They wanted to kind of escape this kind of secluded, isolated life. I don't know if you kind of feel like this almost reflects the two characters. I don't know.
No, absolutely. I think the time and the setting is really kind of pivotal to what's going on, even though it's more as a subconscious thing, and it's something that you kind of unearth yourself. It's never really pushed in front of you or put to the foreground. It's kind of dangling in the background. And you do get the sense that, you know, obviously this was a time when Germany was divided. There was the wall which separated people from being together. And obviously that is, you know, it plays a sort of part, whereas the wall is obviously a physical manifestation of separation. You get, quite literally, a mental sort of rift between people in the film.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I kind of thought from it. I mean, like, it opens up with this very kind of haunting images of, you know, of kind of post-war Berlin. I mean, it's going into the 80s, but, you know, you still have the Berlin Wall, or there was still so much division. And I thought straight away, like, there has to be some kind of political context in the film. But I guess there's not. I think it's probably more a metaphor of, you know, what this relationship is going through and a divide between the people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, it seems, I don't think there's any real, I mean, to be honest, it could be completely wrong. The film could be overtly political, but it's just not something that I've particularly read into. But I think, you know, he uses the setting and a lot of the scenery and architecture and stuff, and just the general mood, it just seems very cold and very befitting, sort of like a physical manifestation of what's going on in the minds of these characters.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of the other things that I've been trying to wrap my head around just out of interest, a couple of other little symbols. Like, of course, there's the bathtub, which we basically see Bobby in for the... Is it Bobby, his son?
Bob.
Bob. Like, we basically see Bob in the bathtub for most of the movie. Obviously, there's a big scene at the end of the film where he appears to be drowning himself in the bathtub. You know, it's the when the teacher first comes around to visit Mark, he's in the bathtub. He's in the bathtub at the start of the film when we first meet him. And I've been trying to figure out, like, what that sort of means. And the only thing that I can point to is that, you know, he's obviously somebody who's kind of caught in the middle of all this. And I don't know if that idea of kind of drowning is something that, you know, his character's going through. In this film, you know, he's kind of witnessing this very traumatic breakup between his two parents, and I don't know.
Well, I mean, here comes a bit of a strange theory, and it's a bit from the left, but it kind of ties into what I was saying about there being a lot of religious connotation in the film. Obviously, as I mentioned before, the film deals heavily with the sense of faith, like I said, whether it be in an institutionalized relationship or it be of, like, a secular belief, Catholicism or what have you, there is religious undertones to the film, and I think that's one of them. And I think that Bobby is, oh, I'm calling him Bobby now, Bob, which is such a weird name for a child. I don't know why. It's like an older man's name, Bob. But Bob is like the young, and he's the pure. He hasn't sort of been infected by the corrosion of guilt and paranoia that, you know, faith and having to declare all of yourself into believing into one thing. He's kind of very much pure of that, and he is obviously a child, and it's almost as if he is being baptized, hence why he's in the bathtub all the time, and he's being indoctrinated into this sense of faith, you know, like it's almost a before and after.
Yeah, I mean, it's full of theories, pretty much.
Yeah.
Any theory, especially if you want. So, I mean, I don't know. I still can't get my head around it. But I kind of like this about the film. I mean, it makes me want to go back and see it again and again and try and figure out what these kind of symbols and motifs all mean.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. I mean, any film that can make you come up with different ideas and can spark conversation about what something could be, even if someone just completely disagrees with what it is or it's just totally far-fetched, you know, any film that is open to suggestion and to theoretical sort of dissection is wonderful, and it's one of the reasons that, you know, I initially wanted to do Film Club was to be able to do that with films. And Possession is definitely a film in which, you know, interpretation is exactly that. It's it could be whatever you want it to be, in a sense.
Absolutely. I think it's a great choice of film club because of that. You know, I think pretty much everybody who sees this film will find at least one or two different kind of theories in what Possession is pointing at. I think what we can kind of all agree on, though, that is it's a super well-made film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Like I said before, I really thought there were lots of kind of similarities to The Shining, which I believe this was made a few years before The Shining as well, right?
Yeah. And two or three, I think.
Which is kind of amazing. I mean, like, it reminds me of the whole kind of Peeping Tom Psycho thing. You know, a lot of people mm-hmm. attribute Psycho to being, like, the kind of cornerstone of horror. Like, this is kind of the milestone where it all began. And yet Peeping Tom came, like, a few years before. And I feel like, you know, that kind of surreal really kind of visceral horror film that The Shining is kind of known for kind of being the landmark of. Like, mm-hmm. Possession seemed to do this, like, yeah. 3-4 years before, which is amazing, really, and I really admire that about the film.
What did you think of the overacting in the film? Because there is, I mean, without a doubt, there's plenty of overacting, and at first I thought it was just... I thought it was just bad acting. But on watching it again, to me, it seems as if it's been done purposely. Like, there's a lot of physicality in particularly Sam Neill, like, in the first, like, 20 minutes. Like, he's literally rocking back and forth on the bed in a rocking chair. He's kind of, like, having spasms almost. There's a scene in which he's been in a hotel for weeks, and he's just contorting his body. And it's weird, and it seems almost as if that's where the title kind of really lays into fruition, is that it's... almost this grief and this anger and this confusion is taking an out-of-body experience.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of points towards, like, the end where, you know, the monster sort of evolves into this kind of doppelganger of Mark, you know. And I think the overacting is really kind of perfect in that way because, you know, like you said, the title really does point towards, you know, the kind of the overwhelming emotions that people go through for this. And, you know, Mark, and he does really sort of turn into the monster throughout the film. And so I don't think it would have been appropriate for Andrzej Zawiercki to direct this in a very subtle and nuanced manner. Yeah. I think you really do need to see these characters really driven to the point of complete and utter madness by what's going on. And so it is kind of, it's a real kind of shock to the system at first when you see like this really kind of theatrical shouting, screaming, like overacting. But I think it's actually really kind of suitable for what's like the kind of point of what the possession is trying to make.
I think it really adds a kind of unnerving quality to it as well, because it's like, it's totally, you don't expect it when you first see it, like, whoa, okay. And it's a little bit unhinged, and it's like unpredictable, like you don't know what's going to happen at one point. I mean, the scene in which Isabella Charney's character tries to kill herself with the bread knife, I was like, Jesus Christ, they didn't expect that. It is just so manic and so overly animated, and so it is literally like out-of-body experiences, and it kind of just puts a real sort of sense of dread, and it kind of makes it almost nervous to watch the film at points.
Yeah, it makes it really ominous, like, to watch it. You do just feel this, like, real kind of suspense when you're watching them. But it is overacting, and it is, like, total hysteria, like, seeing the two of them on screen, Sam Neill and Isabella Gianni. But, like, I think it's really good overacting, and it's very rare that you actually see that, you know. Usually overacting is a bad thing, but here I think they do it so well. And I think that's a sign of two really good actors right there, you know, the fact that they can do such, like, hysterical performances but still pull it off in a very relatable way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you say, you usually sort of associate overacting with just bad acting, you know, where it just doesn't fit. But if anything, it does fit, and it fits the stylization of the film, especially the subway scene, which, I've got to be honest, one of the most intense, horrible-to-watch, freaky scenes I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
It's just so jarring and hard to watch, because there's no control. You can't, obviously you can't control what a character does in any film, because it's a film and it's being projected to you, and there's no interactive quality to, you know, an immediate response. But it's literally like, it's just knee-jerk reaction, and it's just, it's like watching this horrible car crash in slow motion. And it's, I don't know what it is, I don't even really know how to articulate it exactly, but it's just, it's wonderful, it's spellbinding, and it's repulsive all at the same time.
There are moments of the film that really remind me of, like, a Cronenberg film, you know, that kind of really kind of gross-out body horror kind of stuff. It reminds me of sort of, you know, what he did with, like, The Fly and Videodrome and things like that. But it's horrifying, and it's totally disgusting to watch, but there is something kind of spellbinding about it, and... You know, I think it helps that a lot of the effects were done by, I can't remember his name, who worked on E.T.
Oh, Callum
and so it makes
Baldy.
It kind of, you know, it is kind of spellbinding to watch in a very, you know, kind of morbid way.
Yeah, no, Carlo Rambaldi, the guy that made E.T., he made the monster thing, the squid-like creature. And even that in itself is kind of unnerving in the same way. You know, it's just something like you shouldn't be watching this. You know, you should tear your eyes away, because it is just repulsive and just irksome and just oh and just ah. But it's like I have to watch. There's something almost magnetic about it. I remember reading shortly after I watched this film that someone asked Carlo Rambaldi what he made of Possession. He obviously didn't really know what the film was going to be about. He was just, you know, hired to make the creature, and he just refused to comment on the film.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, how come? Like, just because he really didn't
He just
like
didn't approve
think it
of.
was used for, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. He just thought, oh, it's just someone wanting a creature, you know, for like a bit of a scary film. Didn't realize it was his total rampage of anarchic mess and craziness. And he seemed to be a bit disparaged by it, but his work is good in it. His work's fantastic. That creature
Oh, yeah.
is really icky and horrible.
Speaking of chaotic stuff, I want to throw some more things at you and see if you can help me
Okay.
out
Okay.
with figuring them out. There is the guy with the pink socks, and obviously there's a reference to pink socks early on in the film, something to do with when Mark's character has been away on some kind of assignment or something. And then, of course, like a police detective, I think it is, that turns up later in the film with pink socks, and I'm like, what is this? What's happening? Any ideas?
I have no idea. I mean,
No,
unless you
no,
go,
me neither.
I mean, the only thing I could throw at, and it's a total stab in the dark, and I'm just thinking of my feet as pink, you know, often associated as a feminine color, and then it's maybe something to do with gender identity. I don't know.
Well, gender is kind of a theme in the film, isn't it? I mean, at least kind of the exploration of like the different kind of gender relations. That is sort of one of the themes of Possession.
But other than that, I mean, I'll be honest. There's a number of things in the film which I'm totally uncertain about, and I think the pink socks thing is just one of those. It's maybe just an inside joke. It's maybe just absolutely means nothing. And Zaloski's just like, yes, I mentioned pink socks at the start. Have the man wear pink socks now? I don't know.
I know, but I mean, overall, like, I think the most important thing about the film is that you kind of do come away with these ideas and these theories, and it is one that you, more than like a lot of films I've experienced lately, it really does make you want to debate and try and figure it out, and you do want to go back and watch it again. As much as there are little faults with the film that I had, I really was kind of spellbound by it, and I really do want to go back and try and figure out some of the deeper meaning and interpretations that you can take away from it.
Oh, absolutely. It's like a mental puzzle. It's kind of like a mental Rubik's Cube, you know, you're just kind of constantly moving the pieces as you're watching it and trying to slot them together to kind of make some cohesive sense. And sometimes you can take, as I said, you know, the interpretation is completely up for grabs, and you can come up with different theories, and things can slot and align with what's going on. Other things just don't make any sense. It seems like, for instance, the really weird camp karate fight scene with Mark and Heinrich, which is almost like a dance. That's honestly one of the strangest fight scenes I've ever seen.
It's kind of hilarious in a way, though. Like, that's one of the things that I mentioned about before with like the Roman Polanski nods. Like, he did this kind of great kind of dark comedy slash full blown horror kind of blend, and he does it really well. And I think Zaleski kind of embeds that into Possession as well. But you know, there are these kind of simultaneous moments of very strange happenings and very kind of disgusting happenings. But I mean, he does it really well. And that's one of the very strange, funny scenes in the film. What it means, I have no idea, though.
No. But I mean, it's certainly an interesting kind of showcase for the character of Heinrich, who I think is a very interesting character. He certainly, for me anyway, at least contributes to the idea of like sexual identity in the film, because there is almost like a very homoerotic tension between him and Mark. And it's never really explained or left to kind of come to any fruition, but I mean, it's just. The film, what I think does wonderfully is it plants loads of seeds of like ethical and theoretical ideas in your brain, and it leaves them to ferment. Some of them do, some of them don't, but it's just one of those things. And I think he is a very interesting catalyst to the film as well, even though he is absurdly, strangely German and just over the top. and his fight moves are just, yeah.
They are all kinds of brilliant.
There's a scene, there's a moment in that fight scene where, when I think he's punched back to the floor, he does this weird, strange, almost Bee Gees disco dance pose where his leg is kind of stuck behind him and his hand is like cocked at a karate chop motion. Just wonderfully weird. I mean, I the thing is, even though that detracts from the film's sort of serious intentions, I think I can't really see it as a negative because it's almost like a bit of light relief, which is certainly what you need in this film. Because the one thing I will say against it is it can be exhausting because of the performances are so turbulent and so volatile, and just there's just so much thrown at you that I think you need moments of strange camp karate dancing to kind of ease the tension a little bit to stop you from just having your head implode.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a tough film to watch, mostly because of just like the kind of emotional intensity between Anna and Mark's characters. But I think that's also what kind of holds it together. We have to talk about how bizarre and how weird and how strange the film is. And I think without that kind of, I wouldn't say chemistry, that's not the right word, but definitely that kind of relationship at the core of it, I think it would have all fallen apart. And I think above anything else, that's the thing that makes this film so good, the way Solowski captures that and does it in such a very personal, emotional way.
It's weird because there isn't so much a chemistry as you say. I mean, the chemistry is not exactly the right word for it. It's more like an energy, and it kind of propels itself. You know, it's an energy that takes on a really volatile form, whether it be like disdain towards each other. Because there's points where they just generally hate each other, but there's points where you can tell they genuinely love each other, and it's perpetuated in such an energetic manner. It is hard to watch, but it's ultimately what makes the film so fantastic.
Yeah, it's a really interesting film, and I'm really glad that you did pick this for Film Club because I never heard of it when you picked it, but I really have enjoyed watching it and trying to figure it out, as much as it kind of frustrates me, figure out the meaning of pink socks and Berlin and trucks dumping cars onto the middle of the road. I have really enjoyed it, and it is kind of a fascinating film.
And possibly the best chair throwing scene in cinematic history, where Mark storms out of the cafe and he seems to just lodge chairs left
Okay,
and
that's not
right.
just a chair throwing scene. That's like a that's a bomb of chair throwing. There are
It
chairs going all over the place right there.
Brilliant. I'm pleased you liked it. I liked it. I liked it more second time, I think, because I got a chance to kind of maybe go over stuff with a more fine comb, as it were. But yeah, certainly. If you've seen it, if you haven't, then why are you still listening? We told you to pause it, then go watch it. But if you've seen it, which we're presuming you have done by this point, please let us know what you think of Possession. Over on our Facebook forums, that's Screen Invasion Film Club Forum on Facebook, or you can get in touch with us via Twitter, which I believe is at Invasion Radio. Is that right?
That's absolutely right, yep.
There we go. There we go. So please let us know what you thought of Possession if you've seen it. And yeah, see if you have any more of any strange theories yourself that you can attribute, or perhaps you know the answer to the pink socks. The mystery
Yeah.
of the great pink socks, we would love to know. We're going to move on now, though. Do you have a trash bag masterpiece for us?
Well, I actually saw a film this week and I thought it was so bad that I had to include it as our trash bag masterpiece. It's not really available stateside, I don't think. It had a very small UK release this year, and it's called The Knot. The idea is that The Knot is going to be this kind of British equivalent to Bridesmaids, but it's just so bad. I don't know why I'm calling it a trash bag masterpiece because there's really nothing good about the film, but it is so like frustratingly bad. I thought that I just had to kind of voice how bad it is to the world, almost as like a warning. I saw it so you guys don't have to. Yeah, it's just, I mean, it plays on every single cliche of like the wedding movie and does it in like the most kind of crass, crude, like just totally lacking in any intelligence or wit. But the funniest thing about the film has actually been like the reactions to it, because it's basically been like panned, like critically, it's just bombed, like, across the board. I think if you go on Rotten Tomatoes, it's one of the few films that has 0%.
But the best
thing about the film is that, like, the director and even the director's mum are so vocal on these reviews about why this is a great film, and, like, they're trying to defend it from all the critics. And, like, if you can find some of the comments on the reviews, then that's probably more entertaining than going out and finding the film. It's just, honestly, it's the worst. It's just not funny at all. It's so goddamn cliched, and just, oh, honestly, it's one of those films that you just want to rip your eyeballs out when you watch it. I wish I had not, so I could hang myself. It is so bad.
Oh man, they should stick that on the poster.
I know.
Stick that on the DVD. Like,
there's on the poster where it's like hilarious, and you know, I think there's a one review says, like, it's the British Bridesmaids. And I'm like, where do you get these from? Like, especially when you see the poster on Rotten Tomatoes, and next week you have, like, 0%, like, 100 reviews out of 100 reviews are negative. But yeah, they should definitely put my quote on a poster. Go and hang yourself when you watch it.
I'm just looking at it now. Is it with Noel Clark and Mina Savari in it? Is
that right? Like, what's Mina Savari? Do you remember when she was good in, like, American Beauty?
Yeah.
That's the one. I mean, she's so bad in the film. So bad.
I'm just looking now, and apparently Noel Clark co-wrote the screenplay, which is surprising, because, I mean, he's not the best script writer, but he's done some all right stuff. But, oh no, sounds like you're slipping here. Slipping into a knot.
It's just... it's the worst. Well, it's the worst.
There you go. I will, if I can find a trailer, I will throw it up in the show notes at screeninvasion.com, so you can go get a taste of just how bad the knot is. Apparently, one user on IMDb is calling it the British rom-com of the year, which suggests you shouldn't see it regardless.
You're on Rotten Tomatoes. I've just found it now, and I was going to quote it for you, but I found it. It's from Guy Lodge, who's a great critic, and I think he basically sums it up in this one quote, where he says, "The Knot finds a bumbling groomsman fishing for silver wedding bands in a diarrhea-filled toilet bowl. Viewers searching for moments of wit or insight might just relate."
That's good. That's good. I like that. I think that kind of says all you need to know about the film without having seen it, actually. Well, there you go. The Knot, your quote-unquote trash bag masterpiece for this week. But it's time to move on to further business, and we're going to see what film we're going to be adding to our ever-growing collection in the next 2 weeks. It is time for the public pick. Of course, remember, if you want to get involved with the next public pick, just let us know what films you want to go into this little high-tech tumbler of ours, which is just plastic and as cheap as you can get. But still, it does the job. But if you want a film in there, all you have to do is let us know. Screeninvasion.com, Twitter at twitter.com/invasionradio, or head on over to our Facebook forum at Screen Invasion and let us know there. But now, let's give it a rumble. I wonder what we're going to get.
Just for a quick, give a quick insight as to what's in the public pick this week. Just a few names.
Okay, so we had Jaws recently suggested. Who was it that suggested Jaws?
Mark Ball suggested it. He writes for, I think he writes for Down With Film now, the UK film blog. But he mentioned it this week and said that we had to throw it in there. And absolutely, it's a masterpiece. Why not?
Exactly. Our very own podcast member, TV, and soon-to-be-established author Gwen Reyes suggested Breathless and Empire Records recently, so that's in there. We also have Silence of the Lambs, which I'm secretly praying we get, so Dan has to watch it. And we have a bunch of other stuff. I actually can't remember what we have in here, but there's an interesting mix, certainly. Let's see what we have. All right. Love this part of the show. It's just that palpable tension.
I know, I can feel it. It's so suspenseful.
We have, what's this? Oh, we have The Host.
The Host?
Which is not the Stephanie Meyer film.
The Host.
The Host was, let me see, it was suggested to us when we first started. 2006 film.
The only host I know is the one that's written by Stephanie Meyer. I know that's not out yet, so we don't have to put ourselves in that torture.
Yes. I thought I saw a trailer for that today, actually, because it looked terrible, and I was just assuming, oh, this is like witchcraft and magic. I was like, oh, this must be The Host. It wasn't. It was for a film called Beautiful Creatures.
Is this the monster movie, by the way?
Is
that The Host?
It is, yes. I believe it's a Korean film. The host of 2006, I'll just quickly read the IMDb description for you. A monster emerges from Solshan River and focuses its attention on attacking people. One victim's loving family does what it can to rescue her from its clutches. Directed and written by Jun Ho Bong.
Really? He wrote and directed a film called Mother a few years ago, and Mother was amazing. If you get a chance to go and check it out between watching The Host with us in a few weeks' time, definitely go and check out The Mother as well. That's a great film. That alone has sparked my interest in it.
Well, there you go. I can't remember for the life of me who suggested it, but I will mention them. I will find out in between times and give them a shout out when we actually come back to review the film. But yeah, it's The Host. I'm going to put the IMDb link in the show notes at screeninvasion.com, so if you're having a bit of trouble finding it, just jump on there and I will link you straight to it. So there you go, The Host. Never heard of it prior to it, never seen it obviously. Gonna be interesting.
I've never seen it before, so I'm intrigued to watch it. Obviously somebody really loves this film out there, and I'm sure there are lots of fans, so yeah, I'm gonna find out what it's all about.
I wonder if this one has sex with Isabella Adjani.
I know, it'd be nice to watch a monster movie without the monster sex.
Nice
little refreshing change after Possession.
Oh, you never want to watch another monster. Every time you want to watch E.T. now, you'll just expect E.T. to be... Oh no, that's just wrong, I'm not going there.
Oh no, don't ruin my childhood, please.
Oh, you don't know where those Skittles have been.
Oh no, you've ruined it.
There we go, so that is Film Club. We have The Host coming up in 2 weeks' time, so go check it out. Let us know what you think, as I said before, at screeninvasion.com, at Twitter/invasionradio, or go to Facebook, look for Screen Invasion, and hop on board with our Film Club forums. Let us know what you think of The Host, and of course, what you think of Possession. Or perhaps if you're just catching up, let us know what you have been seeing that we've watched so far, and let us know your thoughts and feelings on those films too. But until then, 2 weeks, we've got a Korean monster film to watch. I'm excited. And I'm going to stop thinking about E.T. in a dirty fashion now. until then, we'll see you next time. Go watch and enjoy.